Earth and Sky.
Welcome to Clear Voices. I'm Jorge Salazar. Known as the banker to the poor, Muhammad Yunus has a vision to end world poverty. Yunus shared the Nobel Peace Prize in 2006 with the Grameen Bank, which he founded. Back in the 1970s, he pioneered the use of microcredit, loans made to the poor without collateral, starting with just a few hundred dollars. Since then, the Grameen Bank has loaned more than $6 billion and has a repayment rate of over 98%. Dr. Yunus spoke with me from his office in Dhaka, Bangladesh, about his vision, the challenges posed by climate change, and a future where poverty is something only found in a museum exhibit. Here is Muhammad Yunus. Thank you so much for taking this time out to speak with me.
Thank you. Okay.
It's easy to feel paralyzed in a way by the reality of world poverty. What is one thing that you'd like to tell someone who feels that way?
I would say that there's nothing to be discouraged about. There are a lot of positive things happening in the world right now. The world is changing very fast. Even the poverty situation is changing very fast. If you look at the two biggest countries in the world, China and India, their poverty is reducing very fast. China, extreme poverty is below 20% right now. In India, it's below 25% right now. So you see that a lot of things are happening in a way. The global poverty is declining. And if you look at the whole map of the world, the hub of poverty is in this region. It's China, it's India, it's a whole region of South Asia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Nepal, and so on. So the bulk of the world poor live in this region. And this particular cluster of countries, poverty is declining very quickly. Even in Bangladesh, poverty is declining very sharply. We are right on the path to reduce poverty by half by 2015. And we are achieving this in a very consistent way. So I would say that there are a lot of things to be excited about, a lot of things to be optimistic about. So I wouldn't feel very discouraged. So anybody who feels discouraged, I will ask him to look at the facts, look at the trend, and he will feel very optimistic about what's happening.
What are your thoughts right now about the future of sustainable development?
Well, one issue that I'll highlight is on the sustainable development side is climatic change. That is a major threat to the whole world. The world itself today, as we are, is not sustainable as we are going around with the greenhouse gas emissions. And that is not doing very well, the kind of expectations, the kind of programs that we must adopt is not being adopted as a global community. Some countries, like European countries, are doing that, but the United States has stayed away from Kyoto Protocol, which was the first cut at addressing this issue to reduce the greenhouse gas emission. And now we are waiting for the next version of it to go through the United Nations to come to a global agreement. It's a binding agreement so that we can reduce greenhouse gas emission by 50% by 2050. Unless we do that, this would be a very threatening aspect of the whole human existence of this planet. We feel it in Bangladesh very strongly because Bangladesh is in the front line of global warming, the threat and the disaster that is posed by global warming. The Bay of Bengal, the ocean right next to us, the ocean water is rising at a rate of 3 millimeters per year for many years now. And if it continues to rise for the next several decades, part of Bangladesh will be underwater. A big chunk of Bangladesh is under 1 meter of height from the sea level. So it's very easy to get Bangladesh under seawater. And Bangladesh has 145 million people. So if part of Bangladesh goes down underwater, these people will be homeless, their life will be threatened, their livelihood will be threatened. And this will happen in many other countries in many other different ways. So this is one issue that we must address right now. On the economic side also, it doesn't look very well, because if you take the five big countries in the world in terms of economic power, USA, UK, Japan, Germany, and France, they are about 13% of the world population. That 13% of the world population controls or have their income, which is over 45% of the global income. And if you look at the bottom countries on the economic ladder, like China, India, and Indonesia, just these three countries, They are 42% of the global population, but they have only 9% of the total income of the world. So that's very lopsided income distribution, which is not very good for the world to look forward to. So that needs to be addressed. And the last point I would mention is the lifestyle that we are continuing to have in terms of the system, the market system that we have, which is promoting a market slogan that buy more, buy now, so everybody is busy buying, everybody is busy consuming, but they don't realize how much of the exhaustible resources we are using up by this wasteful way of living, the lifestyle. So we need to look for a new kind of lifestyle which will be consistent with the resources that we have in this world. So it shouldn't be something that will be using up everything by the rich countries, because they are the one who is doing the consumption, the highest level of consumption. So in the way they are using up the resources, while the new nations which are emerging from their extreme poverty, when they come to the level they want to use these resources, they may find none. So we need to talk about how we can use the exhaustible resources that we have, how we allocate them among nations so that we can make our lifestyle consistent with what we have today and what we need tomorrow. So these are the three items I thought I would mention them.
What was it that inspired you to want to found the Grameen Bank?
Well, I was not planning to create a bank called Grameen Bank or any such thing. I live in a country where frustrations kind of grow all over you as you try to go day by day. And particularly it happened right after Bangladesh became an independent country, after a devastating war where many people got killed and the total devastation of the country. And we ended up with a famine in the country. So I was what I was trying as a young economics teacher to see if I can be of any help to the poor people in the village next door to the university campus who are going through these extreme economic hardships. So I was doing a lot of little things as I thought I could do as a person. And I confronted the situation of money lending in the village. So I tried to solve that by lending money myself. So I took $27 from my pocket and gave to 42 people to relieve them from the clutches of the money lenders. So that's what the first triggering point was. And I wanted to continue to do that, to replace the money lenders by giving reasonable market-oriented lending. So I went to the bank to see if I can persuade the bank to lend money to the poor people. Bank said it cannot be done. So I started campaigning against the bank to persuade them to give this loan. Finally, I offered myself as a guarantor to make this loan come to the poor people. So this was a small, tiny little thing. But it became so popular in the village, I wanted to expand it to other villages. And gradually thought maybe the best thing would be to create a separate bank out of it. So about 7 years later, I finally could convert it into a bank and called it Grameen Bank. That's how it started, a bank for the poor people, without collateral, without guarantee, without legal instrument, so that people can freely take money without any kind of preconditions and start their own livelihood, start their income-generating activity. And then it became popular all over Bangladesh. We expanded it all over Bangladesh. Now it became popular all over the world because this is a situation which prevails not only in Bangladesh, it prevails all over the world. Banking system kind of stops way up above. It doesn't come down all the way to the ground level. So there is a big vacuum in banking system. 2/3 of the world population have no access to banking system. And we are saying we can create a banking system which is inclusive so that even the poorest person have no difficulty in doing business with a bank. Even the beggars in Bangladesh, in Grameen Bank, we lend money to beggars too. Right now we have over 90,000 beggars in that program and works beautifully. So this is the demonstration that we are giving to the world that banking system can be different and we can make it happen.
Are you hopeful about the world of the 21st century? I mean, do you think that humanity will be able to overcome the many environmental challenges, the climate change you mentioned earlier, new social challenges that we don't even know about yet? And do you think that microcredit will be able to help us face that challenge?
Well, I'm very optimistic, and for good reasons. Optimistic because I see so many changes happening which never happened before. If you compare the last 20 years with the previous 20 years to that, you see how many changes have taken place in the last 20 years. You couldn't even guess before you have gone through these 20 years that those things could have happened. You never believed 20 years back that Berlin Wall can disappear, just like that. I mean, without any shot or gunfire, without any big army standing opposite to each other, nothing. Just people chipped it out and the whole wall disappeared. And you never believed that the Soviet Union will come more, just a sandcastle. It did. There was no big war to do that. It's just simply to its inner weight, it crumbled. A lot of technological change. You didn't believe there'll be fax machine in the world. It came. You never believed there'll be internet. You can't even think that such a thing would exist. It came. Now it's part of our life. You cannot think of a life without internet. But this is just at the tip of the iceberg, the technology side and the social changes side, political changes side. So imagine what is left inside once you see only the tip of the iceberg. So I see that the bulk is in the base. So lots of dramatic things can happen in the next 20 years. If I have to write something about the next 20 years, what will happen after 20 years, in 2027, for example, I would really work very hard to find out the craziest science fiction possible in terms of social changes, in terms of economic changes, in terms of technological changes. Now it's a question of making up our mind. Where do we want to be in 2027? It's not what it will be. It is what we want to be. So that's the hard decision that we have to take. There we want to create a planet which is sustainable so that we don't create this global warming. It is within our control, and human beings are always wise, always have enough intelligence to have a better life for themselves. So those intelligence will be used as we go along. Now it's coming into the focus. Now people are discussing about the global warming, which was not there 20 years back, but it's now very solid, very important thing. The countries like United States were reluctant to do anything about it. Will be very soon, like Soviet Union, with the internal weight of it, they have to change their mind. And very soon, not because somebody from outside pushed them, it is their own willingness, own desire to protect the world. It will have to happen because people will find out that this is not really something they can go with. So in other countries will follow the suit. Now, for example, China. China has now kind of overtaken the United States in terms of greenhouse gas emission, which is a bad sign. So once seeing China overtaking the United States, we now still will think very hard whether they would like to continue or reduce it so that China, India, and others who are becoming the new players in this game of global warming can be restrained. Because if you don't restrain yourself, you can't tell others to restrain them. And if nobody restrains, then we are hurting everybody else. So this is what I see. Good sense will prevail. It will come. It has to come because, as I said, human beings are wise creation. It will not destroy itself. So this will come because of the technology that we have. We can communicate with each other very quickly. And microcredit is another signal. The things that we thought cannot be done could be done. And it can happen, which kind of boggles mind. That how can you give loans to a poor man or to a beggar woman to start a business, pay back the bank, without asking for any collateral? How can people pay back without collateral? We are having a hard time in the conventional banks, get the money back with all the collateral, still we have difficult time. But here, microcredit doesn't ask for any collateral. Still it gets paid back, it's 99% repayment rate and so on. So this gives an example, and it's not only in Bangladesh, it's all over the world. So people can pay their own life, that's also very important information, that poverty is not created by the poor people. Poverty is created by the system. So we have to address that system so that we change the system, so that we change the world. So we have to create a new kind of business, which I'm calling social business, business to do good to people. Now, today we know of only one business to make money. And that is a kind of a humiliating thing to see for a human being being depicted as a machine, money-making machine. Human being is not a money-making machine. Money-making is a part of human being, but human being is much bigger than money-making machine. So why aren't you using the other caring part of human being, sharing part of human being, concerned part of the human being, so that we can create businesses which reflect those urges, and that business would be the social business, business to do good rather than making money. So money making will not enter the picture here at all. So changing the world will enter the picture, and it will be run in the marketplace. So we can do that. Once we can involve this, so immediately we have a different kind of economic system where money making and being good at the same time goes hand in hand, and have a better life for the world and life for human beings.
Dr. Yunus, thank you very much for taking this time out to speak with me. Is there anything else that you'd like to share today with the public or the listeners of Earth and Sky?
Well, one thing that we can change, a different kind of world that we have to believe. We can create a world absolutely free from poverty. There's no human being on this planet would be a poor person, and we can create that in our lifetime. It's not something that we have to wait for centuries. Before even we cross the halfway through this new century, we can create a poverty-free world. And we should be getting ready to make it happen, and we can make it happen because we believe in it. We want to work for it. And then once it happens, then we create poverty museums so that our children and their children can go to poverty museums to find out what poverty used to be like, because there won't be any poverty anywhere in the world to see. So they would go and study that, how it could happen to human beings, the misery and the indignity that people have suffered because other people who enjoyed their luxury and the good life never bothered about what's happening to a huge part of the human population, more than half of the human population. So this is what we should be getting ready for, creating those poverty museums in each village, in each district, in each country, saying goodbye to poverty. Poverty will never come back to our village or our district or our city or our country again. And we put the poverty in the museum. And that's where it will be. It will not belong to any human, civilized human being in the society.
That was microcredit pioneer and Grameen Bank founder Mohammed Yunus. And I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.